Podbean, your message amplified.
Ready to share your message with the world? Start your podcast journey with Podbean.
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 Podbean. The AI-powered all-in-one podcast platform.
Thousands of businesses and enterprises trust Podbean to launch their podcasts.
Launch your podcast on Podbean today.
My school uses Podbean.
My church, too.
I love it. I really do.
In the shadows of myth and reality, monsters stir. From ancient legends to modern nightmares, we explore the creatures that haunt our stories and sometimes our lives. Welcome to Among Monsters podcast, where the line between man and monsters is thinner than you think.
Haddon Clark, the cross-dressing cannibal. I'm Damian Vale. And tonight on Among Monsters, we do not merely scratch the surface. We descend into the abyssal depths of a killer's fractured mind, a labyrinth where sanity fractured and remade itself into something unspeakably vile. He was a predator, as elusive as he was profoundly unhinged. A phantom who hunted his victims cloaked in elaborate disguises, who meticulously collected their personal effects like sacred, unholy relics, and who, in the chilling depths of his confession, claimed to have consumed the very flesh of those he had murdered. This is the story of Haddon Clark, a name that perhaps does not echo with the same horrifying familiarity as Dahmer, Bundy, or Gacy. Yet it carries a legacy of cruelty, of claimed cannibalism, and of psychological horror that is every bit as haunting, every bit as profound in its depravity. He didn't just kill. He vanished into the swirling storm of his own madness, burying secrets and bodies deep within the shadowed earth of Maryland and the ancient woods of New England. He moved through the world wearing masks, both literal facades of costume and the chilling, impenetrable masks of his mental illness. And in his wake, he left behind a trail of blood, meticulously wrapped in silence, destined to be found only by chance or by his own twisted design. The genesis of madness, a family shattered. Haddon Irving Clark was born on July 31, 1952, into a world already breaking at the seams, a family fractured by the very hands meant to nurture. His father was a brutal, relentless alcoholic, his presence a constant storm of violence, his mother herself a deeply unstable soul, wrestled with diagnosed schizophrenia, her days often fueled by gin and punctuated by explosive fits of rage. The home was not a sanctuary. It was a chaotic battlefield, a crucible of emotional neglect and relentless physical beatings. Haddon and his brother, Brad, lived under a perpetual threat, their young lives scarred by the very environment that should have offered solace. But the trauma for Haddon, already susceptible, did not end with the domestic battlefield. From his earliest formative years, Haddon was starkly different, a child set apart by his burgeoning deviance and the perverse cruelty inflicted upon him. His mother, in her deranged malice, would dress him in girl's clothing, subjecting him to relentless mockery and humiliation. His father, a void of protection, offered no shield from this torment. And so Haddon, a sensitive and deeply wounded child, withdrew, receding deeper and deeper into the lonely, silent fortress of himself. By the time he entered the tumultuous years of adolescence, Clark had become a walking storm of unresolved issues. He grappled with the shame of chronic bedwetting, a physical manifestation of his deep-seated anxiety. His childhood, rather than being a period of joyous discovery, was marked by chilling acts of animal cruelty, a nascent expression of his burgeoning pathology. He killed neighborhood pets with a chilling detachment, and then in a terrifying ritual.
Podbean, your message amplified.
Ready to share your message with the world? Start your podcast journey with Podbean.
Podbean, the AI-powered all-in-one podcast platform.
Thousands of businesses and enterprises trust Podbean to launch their podcasts.
Use Podbean to record your podcast.
Use Podbean AI to optimize your podcast.
Use Podbean AI to turn your blog into a podcast.
Use Podbean to distribute your podcast everywhere.
Launch your podcast on Podbean today.
Drank their blood, believing it would transfer their strength. He collected bones, not as a scientist, but as a macabre curator, keeping them in jars, small, silent trophies of his early, unseen transgressions. The early signs were there, stark and undeniable, blazing like crimson flares in the gathering dusk of his developing mind. And as history in its cruel repetition has shown us time and again, when those nascent chilling signs go unheeded, unaddressed, and tragically untreated, monsters are often born in silence. The unspooling life, erratic paths to darkness. Despite the internal chaos, Clark pursued a semblance of normalcy, enrolling in the esteemed Culinary Institute of America, training for a life as a chef. But even within the structured environment of the culinary arts, his aberrant behaviors began to unspool, unraveling the fragile threads of his composure. He was erratic, unpredictable. He stole from unsuspecting roommates, his grasping hands already accustomed to taking what was not his. He picked fights, his simmering anger easily ignited. His instability grew, a cancerous presence beneath the surface, eventually costing him multiple jobs due to his increasingly unpredictable and unsettling demeanor. Throughout the 1980s, Clark's existence became a transient, aimless drift. He bounced between the fleeting hospitality of relatives' homes, the harsh anonymity of homeless shelters, and the cold institutional confines of mental hospitals. His profound mental illness, largely undiagnosed or inadequately treated during these crucial years, simmered beneath the surface, a cauldron of pathology slowly boiling towards the unspeakable act of murder. But he didn't just slip into violence, a sudden, explosive outburst. No, he rehearsed it. He perfected it. He meticulously built it into a chilling, ritualistic practice, a dark liturgy of death. And in 1986, the ritual truly began. The first shadow, Michelle Dore. It was May 31st, 1986, a spring day in Silver Spring, Maryland, where the air hummed with the innocent energy of childhood. 6-year-old Michelle Dore, a tiny sunbeam of a girl, was playing outside her mother's apartment. She asked for a simple, innocent privilege to visit her friend down the hall, who tragically happened to be Clark's niece. Michelle never came home. The case, in its agonizing simplicity, went cold almost immediately. No signs of forced entry, no obvious struggle to betray the violence that had occurred, and chillingly, no body to offer a focus for the desperate search. Clark was questioned briefly. He had been staying with his brother in the apartment complex at the time. But in those early days, the threads of evidence remained loose, unconnected, nothing to conclusively link him to the unspeakable crime. Michelle's family, trapped in a purgatory of agonizing uncertainty, would wait years, long agonizing years, for answers. But Haddon Clark, the architect of their sorrow, had already moved on, carrying his secret. He kept a terrible secret about that little girl, a burden only to himself, a grim trophy of his first success, and buried it deep in the unsuspecting woods, a testament to his cold, calculated nature. The second stain, Laura Hauteling. 4 years later, the shadow stretched. In 1992, Clark's transient existence had led him to Cape Cod, Massachusetts, a picturesque landscape that would soon bear the stain of his cruelty. Here, he found work as a gardener for a wealthy, unsuspecting family. That spring, 23-year-old Laura Hauteling, vibrant and full of life, returned home from college to spend time with her family, unaware of the lurking menace. Clark had been working at her mother's home for months, his presence a quiet, almost invisible fixture, mowing the lawn, trimming hedges, his gaze lingering a little too long near the windows, observing, planning. On May 18th, 1992, Laura disappeared, vanishing into the quiet New England air. Her mother returned from work to find the house locked, an unusual detail. Her daughter's bed was neatly made, a chilling sign of an undisturbed departure. But something felt profoundly wrong, a mother's intuition screaming in the quiet house. Laura's purse and keys, vital lifelines to the outside world, were still inside. Her mother immediately called the police, a desperate plea into the silence. A full-scale search was launched, mobilizing friends, tireless volunteers, and dedicated law enforcement officers. They combed the neighborhood, their hopes fading with each passing hour. Nothing. But when meticulous investigators discovered a bloody pillowcase and telltale strands of long brown hair hidden deep within the household trash, the grim focus of the investigation shifted. It was murder, and the prime suspect, now chillingly clear in its elusive form, Haddon Clark. Clark, a creature of shadows, had vanished after Laura's disappearance. But his transient lifestyle could not hide him forever. He was found days later, living out of his car, disheveled, consumed by a palpable anxiety, muttering to himself, his inner turmoil now visibly spilling forth. Police brought him in for questioning, placing him under the relentless scrutiny of interrogation. He was erratic, paranoid, and soon, under the pressure, the carefully constructed facade cracked. Clark, his mind a twisted compass, led investigators to a remote wooded area outside of town, a place unseen by all but him. He pointed to a shallow, freshly disturbed grave, and in a chilling murmur uttered the words that sealed his fate and brought grim certainty. "She's in there." Laura Hauteling's decomposed body was found, tragically wrapped in a garbage bag, buried shallowly in the earth, her final resting place revealed by her killer. She had been stabbed brutally in the neck and chest. In a macabre ritual, Clark had then dressed himself in her clothes after the murder, a twisted act of mimicry. He walked to the train station, meticulously creating a false trail to make it appear as though she had simply run away. He had, with chilling detachment, watched police scramble in their desperate search, knowing all along that her body lay just beneath the fallen leaves, silent testament to his cunning. The confession and the catalogue of horrors. During the subsequent interrogation, Clark confessed to killing Laura, and then, with a chilling nonchalance, he admitted to something far more devastating, a secret buried for years. He stated he had murdered a little girl years earlier. Her name, he casually offered, was Michelle. Investigators were stunned, reeling from the sudden revelation of a cold case decades old. Clark proceeded to describe in horrifying detail how he had lured 6-year-old Michelle Dore into the bathroom while babysitting his niece. He described slitting her throat in the bathtub, a child's life extinguished in an innocent space. Then, in a revelation that sent shivers down the spines of even hardened detectives, he confessed to drinking her blood and meticulously dismembering her tiny body. He had kept her fragile bones, grotesque trophies, in plastic bags for days, perhaps weeks, before finally burying them in a wooded park. Police, driven by a grim hope for closure, immediately launched a search of the specified site. And there, precisely as he had described, they found them. Tiny, fragile remains, decades old, indisputably belonging to Michelle Dore. Her family, after years of agonizing uncertainty, finally had answers. But for a life so cruelly taken, there could be no true peace. What made Haddon Clark's case even more chilling, elevating it from a horrific double murder to a chilling saga of potential serial devastation, was what came next. During a meticulous search of his storage unit, investigators discovered a trunk, a veritable Pandora's box of human suffering, filled with over 200 items. These were not random objects. They were trophies, trinkets, and personal belongings meticulously taken from women across the Northeast. Jewelry, ID cards, women's shoes, bras, panties, a disturbing collection, each item whispering untold stories. Clark, in his unsettlingly calm manner, stated that many of these items belonged to women he had never formally met, but others, he hinted, belonged to actual victims. Women he had killed, their identities now subsumed into his macabre collection. He chillingly claimed to have murdered over a dozen women, his tally far exceeding the 2 confirmed cases. He spoke of wearing wigs, donning elaborate disguises, even pretending to be female to lure his unsuspecting victims. He boasted of meticulously stalking women for days, a patient predator. He described with detached precision killing prostitutes, runaways, and drifters, the marginalized souls he believed would not be missed, whose disappearances would go largely unheeded. Investigators, listening to his chilling confessions, believed him. But proving the vast majority of these alleged murders would prove nearly impossible. Clark's severe schizophrenia had never been fully or consistently treated. His delusions blurred relentlessly with reality, creating a shifting landscape of truth and fantasy within his mind. His stories, maddeningly, often changed, making definitive confirmation a monumental challenge. But the undeniable presence of the recovered bones, the voluminous trunk of trophies, and the terrifyingly calm, almost conversational manner in which he spoke of his depravity, it all pointed to the horrifying likelihood that Haddon Clark had killed far more than just 2. He may have been one of the most prolific serial killers never fully confirmed. his true body count lost to the dark recesses of his mind and the forgotten places where his victims lie. Justice, delusion, and lingering shadows. In 2000, Clark was sentenced to 30 years for the murder of Michelle Dorr, a measure of justice decades in the making. This sentence was added to the 30 years he had already received for killing Laura Hautaling, ensuring he would spend the remainder of his life behind bars. He now resides in Western Correctional Institution in Maryland, his mind unmoored from reality, continuing to spiral deeper into the abyss of his untreated mental illness. In 2004, from within his prison cell, he wrote chilling letters to the media, grotesque epistles claiming to have murdered women in nearly a dozen states. He included rudimentary maps, fragmented descriptions, many of which have never been confirmed, lost in the murky waters of his delusions and the forgotten corners of the earth. He also, in the most profoundly disturbing claim of all, boasted of having cannibalized parts of his victims, eating flesh from their bodies, a monstrous ritual he claimed allowed him to keep their power. Whether this was the product of his profound delusion or a horrific truth is still debated, a chilling question mark hanging over his crimes. But in Haddon Clark's warped world, truth and fantasy were always inextricably fused by the stain of blood. Today, Haddon Clark sits behind bars, a living testament to the unchecked darkness of the human psyche. He is far from the quiet forests where he once buried bones, far from the unsuspecting women he once watched from behind hedges, their lives unknowingly targeted. He will, in all likelihood, die in prison, his final breath taken within walls of stone. But his horrifying legacy lingers in the shallow graves that still remain unfound, in the hundreds of trinkets meticulously kept as trophies, each whispering a silent story, in the profound trauma left with every family who still wonders, with agonizing uncertainty, if their missing loved one, their vanished daughter or sister, once crossed paths with the man who wore wigs, who whispered with the dead, and who collected the pieces of lives he had brutally extinguished. Clark may never be fully understood, his pathologies too complex, too deeply ingrained. He's been described by experts as schizophrenic, paranoid, dissociative. But clinical labels in their detached precision do little to truly explain the bottomless depth of his calculated cruelty. He didn't just kill, he consumed. He mimicked, he buried. And then, with chilling detachment, he watched. He watched as mothers wept, their grief a public spectacle, as dedicated detectives scrambled, their efforts futile against his hidden knowledge, as news reports of disappearances and unsolved murders flashed across television screens, fueling his monstrous ego. And he smiled, knowing that he, a phantom in plain sight, had orchestrated chaos in perfect disguise. We often imagine serial killers as eruptive forces, angry, impulsive, driven by visible rage. But Haddon Clark was profoundly different. He was soft-spoken, polite, religious even, reportedly quoting scripture in his chilling monologues. He even apologized to some of his victims as he ended their lives, a grotesque parody of compassion. He was broken, not just by the insidious grip of mental illness, but by a world that, tragically, never truly caught his desperate warning signs. A child forced into profound humiliation, his spirit twisted. A young man left untreated, his inner demons allowed to fester and grow. a predator made, then forgotten, until it was far, far too late. Tonight, we remember Michelle Dore and Laura Hauteling, their names spoken into the darkness. And we remember the dozens, perhaps more, whose names may never be known, their stories lost to the silence he imposed. Haddon Clark buried his victims in silence, but their stories, their suffering, and the chilling truth of his evil demand to be told, because monsters are not always confined to fairy tales or lurid fiction. Sometimes they wear skirts and walk in high heels, a chilling disguise. Sometimes they whisper prayers as they kill, invoking a twisted god. And sometimes, the most terrifying of all, they live in our very neighborhoods, smiling, mowing lawns, tending to their ordinary lives, while hiding the dead beneath the unsuspecting trees. This has been Among Monsters. I'm Damian Vale. Until next time, watch for the masks. And remember, evil doesn't always come with a snarl. Sometimes it walks in heels.
Thank you for listening to Among Monsters podcast. Find more episodes of Among Monsters podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, or anywhere premium podcasts exist. Email us at amongmonsterspodcast@gmail.com.